Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with my friend. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you tonight?
Yeah, not a bad game at all. I mean, Nashville was the better team on the night, the more dominant team through the game. They had 10 grade A scoring chances to 6 for the Oilers. And, you know, but the Oilers played a pretty good game in a lot of ways. I like their puck movement. They weren't there, you know. Nashville got it quite a bit off the rush, but the Oilers also were able to move the puck out of their zone, and they're getting better at that, and hopefully will continue to be better at that. Of course, much depends on the fragile fingers of Oscar Achilles Klefbom. Mm-hmm. He's got the one fatal spot that seems to keep getting injured, and he may be out. We'll see about that. So, Bruce, this is the two good things, two bad things, two numbers podcast of the Oilers loss to the Nashville Predators. What is your good thing?
I'm going to have to go with the penalty kill tonight. They faced the vaunted 31st place Nashville power play 5 times. I see your expression and I share it. But when Kevin Quinn said, well, they've scored 4 goals, power play goals, in their last 19 games. I said to my wife, well, there's an 80% chance they're going to score now in this one. And then he said, they're 31st in the league. And I said, make that a 90% chance. But wouldn't you know what? The Oilers actually scored on that first penalty kill. And then they successfully killed off the 4 afterwards. And by your count, including a 4-on-3 for a full 2 minutes of overtime. And the puck spent some time in their zone throughout. But they had, by your count, just 2 grade A scoring chances, Nashville, on all those power plays. I think one was a short one, but there was 4 full power plays, including a 4.
They missed the net a lot.
Yeah, well, guys in the shooting lanes, eh?
Yeah, it was Freddie Strom penalty killing, and I think Chiasson was out there a little bit on some of those PKs, and I really liked the way he was battling tonight. He was really, in fact, I thought the whole Oilers team battled pretty hard. There was a few breakdowns, especially on that second goal, which I'm going to get to in a bit, but the second Nashville goal. But it was a hard-fought game by the Oilers. And I like, they put Drysdale out there on the PK, and Adrian Hopkins was out there a lot, and they both did a good job.
Yeah, they said Hitchcock's been raving about Drysdale's penalty killing, but Hitchcock raves about a lot of things, so I'm never quite sure how much stock to put in some of his strategic commentary, but Leon sure looked good on the PK tonight. He was a leader in every aspect of the game tonight.
So that segues into my good thing, which was, of course, Drysdale's play.
Well, there's a surprise.
Yeah. Before the podcast began, Bruce and I essentially arm wrestled to see who would pick Drysdale as the good thing. So he's having a heck of a season, Bruce. And 38 goals, two really nice goals tonight, just fantastic goals. He's really stepped up with McDavid out. They got 3 out of 4 points with Connor McDavid missing from the lineup, which is not bad. I mean, they have zero room for margin of error. Assistant GM Keith Gretzky was talking about that they're still in the playoff race today. Yeah. And, you know, I think – I think they have to think that. Like, if you're on that team, you've got to think that, and you have got to believe that. You got to be committed to it. So I do not begrudge the GM saying that in the least. Although I do begrudge him not making some trades today. Let me rephrase that. I think the GM has to be the one person in the organization who has a little bit more jaundiced look at it. But the players can't certainly think that way, they were going for it, and Drysdale was going for it in that game. He was just driving that team forward. Every time he had the puck, he was dangerous. He was the best player on the ice tonight, and good for Leon Drysdale stepping up like that.
Well, I have an opinion on that subject, and my opinion is that the GM is part of the team. And I mean, obviously, he's in a different position. He has to take the long view and all that stuff. If he were to decide at this point that he's going to take I'm disappointed that he didn't move Alexander Petrovich, because he's not playing or helping the team. Alex Chason, he's playing 20 over 20 minutes a night. He played another 21 minutes tonight. And if you tell your team, well, we think that a third-round draft choice that might show up in training camp in 2021 and might make the NHL in 2023 is more important than that guy that's been playing 20 minutes every night for us down this stretch. But, oh, by the way, we haven't given up on you, and we expect you to make the playoffs. Like, there's an inconsistency in that message.
That's true, Bruce.
GM, I mean, it's really human relations. Like, people tend to forget that. They think of these guys as being map pins or something on the depth chart. And really, you're dealing with human beings. And the GM is the supervisor of those human beings. And if you tell them one thing verbally, but then you go and do something that's diametrically opposed to that, then you're going to lose them. So I don't begrudge them hanging on to Alex Chason. I just don't think they would have gotten enough for him. And when your options are, well, we can move him along, and then we can bring up some guy from Bakersfield and break up the Condors a little bit more so that some guy can come up here while we play out the string, and down there the team isn't quite as strong. I think you have to pay the short game as well. And even from a losing situation, which right now the Oilers are in, but they're definitely, you know, far from mathematically out of it. And they're in a place where a legitimate hot streak would maybe pull them within range to take a run at it. Having lived through the 1980 end of season run, when the Oilers went from 20-37 and something, I think they were, and they traded for Ron Lowe, and they went 8-2-1 down the stretch and made the last spot. And so it is possible that you have these finishes, and if the GM gives up on those possibilities, then how is this team not going to follow suit?
Yeah, well stated, Bruce. Well said. I'm open to that argument. I would have been open to them trading him too, but I take your point, and I think there's some truth to that. Like, he can't. These guys just want to win, and they want to win now, and they still think they have a chance. Absolutely. And that would be, you know, you got to talk to Connor. Like, listen to Connor McDavid right now. Mm-hmm. Fiercely committed to proving everybody wrong,
yeah,
and determined to make the playoffs this year. If it's all about keeping Connor McDavid happy,
yeah, and you don't piss him off by saying, "Well, sorry, we don't think you're going to be able to do it, Connor and Leon."
Let's say a lot of it is about that, and it is a lot of it. It's everything to the Oilers franchise. Because it's a third round pick is margin. Like, it's not that great value. Like, it's not this huge thing. No. What is it? What is the third round pick like? What are the odds
on 1 in 10?
What is one, like, a third round pick? What is it? It's between 1 in 5 and 1 in 10 of that player ever playing like 100 NHL games. So, and ever becoming a really good player, it's not great odds. It's like in the third round, it's like what, 2 or 3 guys out of the third round each year become good NHL players. So yeah, there's a 1 in 10 chance that if you traded Chason, you would have got a good NHL player down the road eventually. But you get a lot of draft picks, you know? Yeah. And you just can't waste them on Alex Petrovic. That was the real problem. It's not perhaps the real problem. I guess that's the thing. I wanted them to get another draft pick because they had wasted that draft pick. But that's also not really rational, is it? I mean, the draft pick's gone. That's done. You shouldn't compound things. So the question is, what is more important? Keeping McDavid and Draisaitl on side right now and going for it, as you argue, or getting another, you know, trying to make up for that mistake that Shirelli made.
Well, it's not like he sold the farm and tried to bring in a bunch of short-term help. He just left the team. I mean, he made the early trades, as we discussed this afternoon, and then left the team as is. And, I mean, it sounded like he was dangling the line in the water, but the offers just weren't that hot. And, I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, the Oilers have a bad reputation around the league and with cause. But there's no point in just giving stuff away just to say you made a trade.
It sounded like he wanted a player for Chason, like someone, like maybe a pick and a player, like a prospect. So I don't know. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Hopefully they don't value him too much. I value him right now, but I'm not, like I said earlier, I'm not the biggest Chason fan. I like him as a fourth line player or a third line player even, but nothing more than that. Yeah. All right.
I'm just saying re-sign him for 3 years at $3 million. I'm not saying that.
I know you're not. I will go to my bad thing, Bruce, which was the second goal, and it was just a one mistake after another. So first, Nurse coughs up the puck in the neutral zone, throws it up the boards. Then there's a zone entry where Drysdale's late on the zone entry, goes in the corner, and Nashville gets a it goes to the corner, then out to the slot, and Nashville almost gets a scoring chance shot. It goes wide, and then Nuge, and I like Nuge. I'm a big Nuge fan. He just got playing out-muscled, outworked for that puck back to the point, and I hated that play from Nugent-Hopkins. He had an edge on that guy. He's got to get there first, and he's got or get stick on puck and not allow that pass. And then the shot itself, Drysdale. I mean, Drysdale's coming out a little late to block it, but he was, you know, Nuge was actually that was actually Nuge's spot. He just failed. And then Koskinen should have had that. I mean, that's a shot from the point. I didn't see anyone blocking his view. He should have had that shot. And Koskinen had a good game.
He did.
He had a good game, but on both goals, I found him a little bit at fault. Like there was the juicy rebound on the first goal from a wing shot. That's one of them. One of those shots where you'd hope that, you know, it's not a grade eight scoring chance shot where he's got to beat on it. You would just hope he would control that rebound on that play. And then on that one, Subban's goal, you got to make that save, man. You got to make that save. And even though Koskinen made more grade eight saves than Rinne did, that one hurt a little bit. So I didn't like that goal at all, Bruce, for those reasons.
Several reasons. Yeah, it was a rocket by Subban. I mean,
it was
he does have a wicked shot, and he did put it right in the top of the net. But you'd
rising
like to think
rocket.
short side, you'd like to think your big goalie is going to be in front of it somehow.
Yeah. What was your bad thing?
Well, we don't know how bad it is yet, but that injury to Klefbom with 2 minutes left in regulation when he got hacked right on the hand. Notice there was no penalty called, even though the Oilers were trying to kill off a somewhat, well, dubious, I don't know, I guess it's the right call of the penalty on Koskinen. But man, I mean, the Oilers are swimming uphill. And here's Klefbom battling for the puck, and the guy chops him right on the same hand that he just spent 8 weeks healing. And I mean, how long has he been back? 3 weeks? 2 weeks? And 3 weeks, I guess. But man, oh
Brutal.
man.
You see, the Oilers are a team transformed, Bruce, when they have Sekera and Klefbom healthy in the lineup. I thought they've looked good the last few games. They're finally advancing the puck out of their zone in smart fashion again. And it's almost like, what am I watching here? Which team is this?
Well,
Seriously.
since Sekera came back, they've given in 8 goals in 4 games. And I mean, you'd have to go back a long way to find a previous run of 4 games with so few goals against.
Yeah, I'd love to see if Klefbom is out. I hope they recall Jones. I'd like to see Caleb Jones up. Did Bakersfield win again on the weekend?
Let's say won 3-1 tonight. Game
Oh, they won.
17, 17 straight.
Wow.
Tyler Benson with the game winner. Shane Starrett with his 14th win of the 17.
Sweet.
And it was just another solid road win against, I think, a pretty good team in Tucson. So they're
Sweet.
just cooking with gas.
What is your number, Bruce?
Well, my number tonight is 33, and that is the number of face-offs taken by Leon Draisaitl in this game.
That's more than half, eh, the order's
Yeah, well,
face-off.
this game there was only 57. Like some games, you get 70 face-offs, typically about 1 a minute. But this was a 65-minute game, 57 face-offs, and one guy took 33 of those draws, won 17, lost 16, and the whole rest of the team won 11 and lost 13. So he just pulled a huge Leon's share of the face-off duty, and you know, saw it off. It wasn't like he was dominant, but he didn't get dominated either, and he won some pretty key draws along the way. And it just was, that's a very startlingly high number for face-offs in a single game. I don't know where it would rank in the league, but it's the most, I think, for any Oiler in a long time.
He's really come through these last few games, and I just think they need to keep him on his own line. Just think of that one. Just they got to think about this team in terms of this 1-2 punch. McDavid's line, then Draisaitl's line, rolling these lines and have the players commit to that and buy into that.
That's a long-term plan, short-term and long-term plan that I can buy into also.
Yeah.
You know, give them their specific duties and say go with it. But to Leon's credit, the Oilers, you know, McDavid's played one out of the last four games, and the Oilers haven't lost any of those games. You know, they lost two shootouts, if you want to call those losses, you know, basically 65-minute ties and two wins. One of them in overtime and one he's been the go-to guy. I mean, it's obvious who the team leader is in Connor's absence. Like, he's the second in command.
He is such a fantastic player when he's rolling. And I can't wait to see him in the playoffs again, Bruce. I can't wait to see Leon Draisaitl in the playoffs again. And I hope that's next year. The owners just got to figure this out. And I think there's enough talent on Bakersfield. If they trust in those players and move some of them up and just have a huge injection of talent and they get the right coach and GM. I think they need a coach like the Todd Nelson, Ralph Kruger kind of coach who builds the confidence and the offensive confidence of young players and go from there. So my number tonight, Bruce, is going to be just a pile of numbers out of Bakersfield. Tyler Benson has 44 points now in 51 games.
Plus one, yeah.
Joe, he's plus 11, plus minus.
Yeah, sorry, plus one more point tonight, I think.
No, I'm reading tonight's numbers from EAHL.com.
My bad.
Cooper Marody, 41 points in 41 games. Plus 21.
Ooh.
I'm telling you, you can get a third line from Bakersfield, Bruce. Benson, Marody, and Curry. Have that as your third line in the NHL next year. See how that next does.
Year. Next year, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm in favor of getting some of these guys. I don't know which ones yet. They're going to have to prove themselves in camp, but you can't have this situation where you've got so few young players like the Oilers have right now.
Yeah. Joe Gambardella, 41 points in 42 games, plus 18. Josh Curry, 37 points in 49 games. Patrick Russell, 31 points in 42 games. Caleb Jones, 21 points in 33 games, plus 10. Ethan Barinow has 20 points in 39 games. And Lagesson has 20 points in 50 games. And Lagesson is plus 17. So, Bruce, there is – Yamamoto's got 14 points in 22 games. So we can expect him to be in the AHL start of next year, I think, based on that.
Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's good, not great. He is certainly contributing. He got basically the only goal in what was essentially a 1-0 game on Saturday night. So that was obviously a big one.
No, he's a key player down there. He's just not dominating. I mean, you want to get close to a point a game, I think. If you're going to be a top six forward in the NHL, I think that you should be able to get a point or close to a point a game at the AHL. Does that make sense? I think that's a...
Yeah, that's a reasonable line in the sand. And we're seeing Cooper Marody right there in his rookie pro season.
And Gambardella. Now, I don't think Gambardella is, of course, a veteran. Year. Like, he's 25. He's also 20. He played 4 years of college, I believe, and he's 25. So that's a little different. But Marody he's a rookie in the AHL. And
but he did play 4 years. No, he played three years.
But yeah, he played 3 years. So yeah, he's not
a bit older.
He's the same age as Connor McDavid.
Mm-hmm.
They're a month apart, I think. Benson's 20. He'll be 21 in a month, I think.
Yes, March 15th.
Yeah. So these guys, Benson, Marody, Curry, they should be ready to go, and the Oilers could use that injection. And I'm just really excited about.
Well, they finally got some young guys down there that are getting the job done, and then some. I mean, I was just happy to see them on the top of the team. But when you see the team winning 17 straight, and the younger players doing a fair amount of the heavy lifting, you know, that's just a positive sign all the way around. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that the Oilers should be counting on two defensemen from that team making the Oilers next year. And I'm guessing, like, is your 6 and 7 D? Mm-hmm. So Lagesson and Jones. Caleb Jones, maybe Ethan Bear, he's in the running too. So those three guys should be competing for the 6, 7 spots on the Oilers next year, with Evan Bouchard in the mix. Right. Because Bouchard, you know, but it won't hurt Bouchard to go to the AHL. Let's see what he does. I mean, this is the thing with Yamamoto, right? Like, everyone's thinking, well, could he make the, you know, McClellan has him up at the start of two years ago, and then this year he's got him again, right in the lineup, you know, on the top line, and everyone's loving this player. Well, you know, we see he's good at the AHL, but he's not quite there yet. So this is what I'd like to see with Bouchard. Send him down there for a couple months, see how he does too. And you get a real sense, I think, of a player when they're down there in the AHL. Too bad, in retrospect, too bad Puljujärvi wasn't kept down there, that Hitchcock called him up. I mean, I was in favor of Hitchcock calling him up, but only on the understanding that Hitchcock was going to play the player.
Was going to do what he said he was going to do, yeah.
Yeah, and he did for a while, but he really didn't stick with it, and he never got him on the power play. And I think Puljujärvi is a player that obviously needs some power play time in order to thrive. Well, Bruce?
Okay, well, I've got one more line for you from Bakersfield stat line, and that is Shane Starrett. 29 games played, 20 wins, 3 losses. 3 other losses. 23-3. 3 shutouts. 920 save percentage and a 2.24 goals against average. Like, those are sparkling numbers right across the board.
Okay, here's my question for you, Bruce. Mm-hmm. Do you bring in a veteran goalie backup? Or do you say, this is Shane Starrett's job, and we're going with Starrett and Koskinen, and we're going to go with Stuart Skinner and Wells in the AHL, and that's what we're doing.
That's a tough call, because I got, you know, so little experience, NHL experience, in the organization right now. I mean, Al Montoya's got by far the most, and he's on his way out. And so they're going to be sorely tempted to bring in at least a proven number 3 netminder. But if Starrett can beat him out, because, you know, if he's legit and he's this good and he comes up and he makes the team in camp, hey, great. You know, you got to give him a shot.
It's kind of hard to judge goalies in camp.
He's in the same position Brossoit was maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah. And again, Shane Starrett is an older player, right? He's not. Mm-hmm. He's 25, I believe.
He's 25 in July.
Okay. And let me just see his contract. As goalies go,
he's RFA.
Well, of course, we have both of you. I forgot. They have this other goalie, Stolarz.
Yeah.
Right now, so they do have this goalie already on
with
their roster.
Minimal NHL experience, but he does have some NHL experience. So, they could go with a 3-headed monster of Koskinen, 6'7". Stolarz, 6'6", and Starrett, 6'5". There you go.
So Starrett is an RFA?
RFA, right? Yeah. He signed a 2-year deal, and this is his second year.
Let me just see. There's something here on his contract. It doesn't look good. It's got a little hammer on it, which I'm guessing means – what does that mean? I'm looking at cap friendly. I'm just worried he might be a free agent because he hasn't played enough NHL games and he's at a certain age.
Yeah, I don't think he's there yet because he's only just finishing his ELC. Like,
okay.
You don't get there quite that quick, even if...
So the Oilers have him. Like, I don't mind him playing another year in the minors. I'm okay with that. And, you know, maybe Stolarz. We've yet to see Stolarz play, so... Mm-hmm. He's another big, tall, lanky goalie like all of these guys. So... But good for Shane Starrett. He's put himself in the conversation, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I've always, whenever I've seen him play it in practice, in training camp, in games, he's always looked like a solid goalie to me, very calm. Like, you know, bigger version of Cam Talbot or some such kind of goalie. And so good for him. Good for him. And, of course, Stuart Skinner's also down there. So
he's given in 2 goals or less in 10 of his last 11 games. That's fairly unbeatable over an extended period of time, 2 or less.
Yeah, The definition of an AHL player who should be getting a chance in the AHL is someone who's dominating at the AHL level. So we'll see. Maybe after a playoff run, if Shane Starrett keeps us together for 5-6 months in a row, it's really solid play, the answer is obvious then. So good for him. All right, Bruce, let's leave it there, man.
Yep, sounds good.
The game grades?
I am. I'm just really getting started. There was a huge mix-up with the stats at NHL.com tonight, and they finally spit them out, but it took them about, well after the game was over before they resolved some kind of a computer glitch, I think.
Yeah.
So that slowed me down a bit because that's part of the parsing of the game, but we'll have them up eventually. I would say, don't wait up. It'll be up. You can read it in the morning, folks.
There are some people who contact me and say they wait up to see your game. I think they live on the other side of the world, though, or something like
Some of them do, and then some of them are just, night people like me. They up, and when it comes up, they read it, which is great. I appreciate them.
Thanks, Bruce. Thanks
for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.